This week in Massachusetts, 12,000 high school seniors are taking the state-mandated exam called the MCAS. Most of them have already taken it and failed. This is their last chance to pass the test so they can graduate this spring. Those 12,000 students represent almost half of the state's Latino seniors and 44% of African Americans. And they also represent a growing trend. More and more high schools across the country now require students to pass a rigorous exit exam. And more schools are withholding diplomas from students who fail to measure up. For two different perspectives on high-stakes testing, we turn to Monty Neal, Executive Director for the National Center for Fair and Open Testing, and Paul Revel, a professor of Harvard's Graduate School of Education. Both agree that the testing reveals widespread inequity in education and that most of it falls along socioeconomic lines. However, they differ on the remedy. Paul Revel.
In our view, the remedy is not necessarily a test, but it's having a high standard and holding everyone to achieving against that standard, but you need a test periodically to measure performance.
In Massachusetts, as in other states, the solution has been labeled often standards, but the reality in practice that's played out in the states is that the tests define the standards because that's what counts for the kids in the schools. Rather than address the real underlying causes of the problems with schools, the assumption has been that we can largely test our way to better education.
What's interesting about Massachusetts is it's not the only state to mandate an exit exam, but the test is much more difficult than many of the other states. They didn't pull back on the standards on this test.
Well, that's been an attempt to make the test align directly with the standards, and we have high standards, particularly relative to other states in terms of what we expect students to know and be able to do, and therefore the tests reflect those standards and become, in effect, a test that you'd want teachers to teach to. People at any level of educational achievement can find challenge in them. They are among the best tests in the country in terms of a whole variety of independent assessments that have been made of them. 40% of them are open-ended items so that they give students the opportunity to demonstrate their capacity for critical thinking.
I have to stop you there. When you say open-ended items, I need you to explain to me why that's important.
People who are critics of tests are fond of talking about the nature of multiple choice questions and how they dumb down the curricula, they trivialize things, they make it a multiple choice, a trivial pursuit kind of exercise. Open-ended questions give the lie to that criticism in the sense of asking more broad-based kinds of questions that cause students to have to demonstrate their analytic capacity and their ability to write persuasively. So, for example, you have an eighth-grade test a test question that would ask you something like, think of a novel you've read in the past year and imagine a secondary character that was in that novel and tell in your essay why the inclusion of that secondary character was important to the telling of the story. Now, that's the kind of question that demands thinking and the demonstration of thinking capacity and writing capacity. I have no problem with my children's teachers teaching to that kind of question.
I think there are some real problems with this. There are, in fact, more open-ended questions. However, in there's only, in the end, a few open-ended questions on the test because they take a lot of time. One of the things that you find as a result of open-ended questions on tests across the country is that teachers begin to teach very formulaically how to answer an open-ended question in order to get a higher score. So on the surface, it's a good question that Paul just put out there. It's, in fact, a reasonable question for a teacher to do in a classroom. But when you use them for high-stakes purposes, those get distorted and you end up with formulas rather than real thinking.
Now, you mentioned high stakes. The goal, or I guess the hope, was that these tests would eradicate the achievement gap between minority and non-minority students. And obviously that hasn't happened with such a large percentage of students failing these tests over and over again. Yet it's somewhat surprising that some of the strongest support for these tests comes from the schools that those students attend. Urban principals see this as an equity strategy.
Which, of course, was the design of the reform in the first place. I mean, the larger question, Michelle, here is what do we want to guarantee that students know and are able to do by the time we graduate? And do we want our diploma in Massachusetts to actually stand for something? And what's been important from the standpoint of the policy and politics of this reform is that it has generated so much attention on the needs of the children that we have historically failed in our schools. Massive amounts of money injected toward remedial education, toward finding new opportunities, new ways of getting all these children to a level of competency that will guarantee that they'll be successful when they enter into college or employment after high school. Not simply sending them along with a piece of paper that says, you tried as well as you could, you did the best you could, but we don't really know whether you know anything.
It's just really misleading that the diplomas have not meant anything. What we're in the situation now is you can look at high schools in Boston where kids in the past years have graduated from those schools, gone on to college, and many of them succeeded. And many of those same kinds of students this year are not going to get a diploma, it appears. So they won't be able to go to the colleges. Clearly, many of the schools need a lot of improvement. But what's also gone on with high stakes is you put the improvement on the back of the kids. So you've got kids who, in fact, did what they were expected to do, who've worked hard, learned a good deal, in fact, who may not know in one area what the state has said they have to know, but know many other things that would enable them to make real progress in life.
Professor Revel, are we in danger of creating a class of pushouts rather than dropouts? Schools were always meant to be the most reliable engine of upward mobility, and these are students whose hopes and dreams may be dashed if they can't pass that test.
Schools have historically been a good mechanism for reproducing the exact social order that they exist in. And so the effort behind this reform is to actually have school performance and school attendance mean something in terms of what you know and are able to do. So what we're saying is not that you're punishing young people by not giving them a diploma in 4 years, but that nowhere is it written that you're entitled to get a diploma in 4 years' time. What you're entitled to get as part of your education is an opportunity to learn the things that are important to you to be successful later in life. And if that should happen to take you 5 years or 6 years to get to that level in light of the disadvantages that may not be your own fault and may be the function of a poorly functioning school system, then we do better to give you those skills and that knowledge than to certify that you have them and send you along to a place where later on those deficits are going to catch up with you.
Thanks to both of you.
Thank you,
Michelle.
Thank
you.
Paul Revel of Harvard's Graduate School of Education and Monty Neal, Executive Director for the National Center for Fair and Open Testing, or FAIR Test.